what kind of opportunities are there available for you overseas? Well, we're going to learn more about that and where you can find an EMS job outside of the U.S. If you're looking for that and looking for a change of pace, well, you found it right here on this week's episode of the MedicCast.
Transmitters? We don't need no stinking transmitters.
This is the MedicCast, a podcast for EMS providers by EMS providers, featuring EMS news, products, tips, tricks, and commentary. So grab your gear and glove up. Here's today's show with the PodMedic, Jamie Davis.
Well, good day and welcome to this week's episode of the MedicCast. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the PodMedic, and I'd like to take this opportunity, as always, to welcome you to this week's show. This week's episode has a lot of great content coming to you from the EMS Today 2016 conference in Baltimore, where I was covering the show from the physio control booth. In this episode, we have a single segment where I chat with Mad Dog Medic about his work as a paramedic in the Middle East and what you can learn from him about working abroad and where those opportunities lie. Before we get to all of that, though, I do want to make sure you check out the links and additional information you'll find available for you over at the MedicCast blog at mediccast.com/blog. There's a show notes link at the top of the page. Click that link and it'll take you right to the most recent episode, and you can scroll down there and find previous episodes as well. There's also a search box there for you on the right-hand side if you're looking for something in particular, but take some time and make sure you follow up on the information you hear me talk about on the show each week so you understand how it applies to your own EMS practice and protocols. If you want to get back in touch with me, you still want to have a question or a comment, well, I want you to, so go ahead and email me at podmedic@mac.com. Shoot me those emails with your comments and questions on an episode, or you can send me suggestions and interview ideas for future episodes. Either way, I work hard to respond back to every email that comes in, and I'll get back to you as well, so please keep those emails coming. That's it for our contact information. We'll go ahead and get ready for the rest of this show. It's coming up in just a sec. The Mad Dog Medic, well, he's a social media fixture in the EMS space for those of us who follow the EMS community online. I always try and connect with him when I get the chance, if only just to say hello. This time, though, I brought him on the show to talk with me about what opportunities there are overseas for paramedics and other EMS positions around the world. Check out this segment from the Physio Control booth, and while you're at it, drop them a thank you on their Facebook page or Twitter feed for having me in to cover the conference. It's great to let them know that you appreciate their help bringing me to these different shows. Hi, Jamie Davis, the PodMedic here in the Physio Control booth at EMS Today 2016. I'm here with Mad Dog Medic. He's been on the show before, and we're going to be talking about paramedic jobs not in the U.S. There are really great opportunities available for people overseas, but at first I have to say, hey, Mad Dog, it's good to see you.
Good to see you, too. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming back and wanting to be on the show again. Yeah. It's great to have you. So you work in the Middle East, and you have some great opportunities there. You're very happy with being in where you are. Are there a lot of opportunities for people not in the U.S. if they really want to work overseas in other places?
There are. Most of the jobs for paramedics overseas are in the Middle East. To work in Europe or in Australia or South Africa, they usually, like in the U.S., require you to go through their training and certification program. In the Middle East, there are a lot of chances for people to work there, but. And people ask me about this a lot because, you know, they say, hey, I've just got out of paramedic school. I want to go work in the Middle East. But they're not looking for people who just got out of paramedic school. They want at least 5 to 10 years of experience. And they're very degree happy. They want people who have degrees, at least associate's degree. But if you have a bachelor's or anything, you know, higher than that, then they certainly want that. A lot of people ask me about where the jobs are, and a lot of different employers are hiring, governments are hiring, and the best way to find out about that is to do a Google search. Paramedic jobs, Middle East, and then list the countries. And the countries that are hiring the best right now include Qatar, and the Ministry of Health over there has a big program. The Emirates, the United Arab Emirates, which include Abu Dhabi and Dubai, and you can even check in Bahrain and Saudi Arabia. All of these are countries that are safe to live in. And what I mean by safe is, you know, I'm not going to get shot in the movie theater. And while there is some unrest in some parts of it, generally, expat workers are treated really, really well there. And
No more dangerous than working in New York City or any other major metropolitan area here.
Absolutely. In fact, in many ways, it's a lot safer. And, you know, the type of work that we see is very different, reflecting that level of safety.
Yeah. So what are some of the things, the misconceptions that people have? I mean, when someone says, all right, I'm going to work in the Middle East, they get a job offer in the Middle East, but are they prepared to work in another country and deal with cultural differences and things like that?
Well, I was an expat kid, and I lived in Europe as a child, so I thought when I took this job, oh, I'm prepared, I'm open-minded, I can accept everybody, and no, I was not prepared. But it is not at all like people believe it is, or from what I hear anecdotally, you know, people don't drag you off to get your hands cut off. People don't hate you because you're an American. There's not a bunch of people running around with swords on their hands, you know, yelling and hollering to kill the infidel. In fact, as Americans especially, they treat us really well. And they were very, very welcoming. So I had to get over a lot of my own prejudices that I didn't realize I had. And that's a big challenge with patient care, too, because you have to kind of change your mind about who this person is and be a bit more objective about it. And then there's some cultural balances, you know, like caring for women. And it's possible, and I've done a lot of it. And it's just that you have to just kind of go through the little formality of asking permission. And then, you know, of course, you know, if someone's hurt, they want someone to help. And there's such a very small culture of personal violence. When people are having a conflict in the Middle East, there's lots of arm waving, a lot of yelling, but people don't stab and hit each other very much.
Okay.
Other than recent events, you know, with some attacks going on from Daesh and ISIL, people don't fight each other. I don't think I've run a gunshot wound in 6 years.
Wow.
Yeah, and you know, and the drugs and availability of drugs over there are different. So yeah, it's an adjustment. I have a colleague who worked in New York for 25 years, and now he works with me, and he considers his job a retirement because there's just so few trauma cases and stuff that he's dealing with. So
it's medical and just normal medical stuff.
Well, there's normal medical stuff. We do get a lot of trauma. They have a very, very high traffic fatality rate over there. Nobody wears their seatbelts. They don't really haven't developed that culture of safety that was really pushed by the NHTSA over here in the United States and also in Europe. So, you know, we see a lot of traffic fatalities and severe injuries from traffic.
So you do have those trauma calls, but you have other things that are, you know, then you're not getting the gunshot wounds and the stabs and things you get in any American inner city environment.
And you become a cardiac expert because the population over there just has, at least to where I'm working, has a very high rate of diabetes, heart disease, hypertension. So we do run a lot. I run a lot of 12 leads.
I'll bet. Yeah. I'll bet. We should be running more 12 leads anyway. I'm a firm believer in that.
Me too.
I think that, you know, we're reticent in some cases as paramedics to do 12 leads, and yet we're all jumping on doing some of our other skills. And I think we need to start thinking critically about when we should be applying things like 12 leads, the non-invasive diagnostics, before we start jumping in on some of our more invasive skills.
Yep, I agree completely. Baseline 12 lead, like with first patient contact almost.
It doesn't take that long.
No, it doesn't.
And once you become competent at it and you're confident in your skills, you can get a 12 lead in very, very quick time frame.
Yep. I think touching back on the difference between working in the Middle East and preconceptions, one thing I discovered, and I've been there for 6 years, is that regardless of where you're from, what language you speak, who you pray to, everybody wants the same thing. They want to get along with everybody. They want safety and security for the family, and they care for the families. And keeping that in mind helps, you know, maintain compassion for my patients, connect to my patients, and actually I've met some really cool people and I've really enjoyed meeting them and getting to know them. And so, you know, I'm not ready to become a citizen and move there for good, but I've definitely had a much more pleasant experience than I expected.
That's interesting, and that's something I've always believed, is that I think we misinterpret someone's different culture as that they don't have the same wishes and desires for themselves and their families as we do, but they want, you know, they want to have a safe place to live. They want to raise a family. They want to do all the things that we want to do, and we just need to really respect that. And you, like you said, you come at it from that direction, and suddenly they're just another patient.
Yeah, and if you keep that in mind when you're interacting with them, then oftentimes whether they're a patient or just someone you've met, also keep in mind that one thing that we also all have in common is we all want to have fun. And that's a really good way to connect with some people.
Just get them laughing, right?
Just get them laughing and having a good time. Yeah.
That's excellent, excellent. So do you want to tell people how to follow you and what you're doing? Or you want to leave that on the down low?
I mean, I'm on Twitter at the Mad Dog Medic.
Okay.
That's
good enough.
Yeah, I don't have a webpage anymore because I shut it down. Because of some of the censorship and reaction of some of the regimes over there to people who were blogging about their country. I may be bringing it back up again, but I'll announce that on Twitter.
Okay.
And Facebook said, since I wasn't using my real name, I can't have a Facebook account anymore.
What's up? Mark Zuckerberg, please.
Well, you know.
Give the mad dog his
what
due.
What to do, yeah.
But that's good. Well, thanks so much for coming on again
and talking about
this.
Yeah.
I think this is a hot topic, and I get asked questions about it all the time, too. And I always refer them to you and say, follow this guy and see what he's doing, and they'll be the person that can lead the way. So thank you for coming back here. How's all this conference going for you so far?
It's good. I'm enjoying myself. I'm actually learning things, and I'm, of course, reestablishing connections, meeting old friends. So it's
very
good conference.
Well, thanks for coming back, and we'll see you again next time you come back to the States.
Thanks for having me.
All right,
I look forward to it.
I want to thank all of you for checking out this segment here from the Physio Control booth here at EMS Today 2016. I'm Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic, here for the Medic Cast. We'll have more segments from the conference on this channel, so make sure you check back here often for the other things we're talking about.
Good morning from the Physio Control booth here at EMS Today 2016. We're doing this live, so you'll enjoy the ambiance around us. We love doing the live disaster podcast, and we've done several others. So if you might want to catch the Medicast discussion that Jamie just had with Mad Dog Medic here, where they talk a little bit about what it's like to be a medic in Saudi Arabia. So we don't want to repeat that whole segment, but give them a little taste of that.
Well, I work in the Middle East, I've been there for 6 years, and I work as a paramedic, just like I do did in the United States. So there's a lot of similarities, a lot of differences. But one of the things that's very different in the Middle East is how the community and the rescuers and public safety personnel respond to disasters.
And I
include the community because that's a big factor in it. In the past year, I have been involved in response to a massive apartment fire with over 200 patients.
Wow.
And several terrorist attacks on local mosques and some fires and incidents involving weddings and vehicular crashes. And we can have an MCI or a disaster when a bus full with 75 Pakistani workers rolls 6 or 7 times on the highway. Suddenly,
that's a problem.
It's a disaster. Yeah. So it's very different. We run into a lot of challenges. The EMS system there is fragmented. I work for an EMS system that's run by an oil company, but also there's Red Crescent Society, kind of the government-funded EMS system, and every hospital has their own EMS response, and where people are transported and what treatment they receive is based on their insurance. So it's not a unified emergency.
So there isn't
system.
Like a trauma system per se.
They have a few trauma centers where people can go, but some people get refused to go to there because they don't have the insurance or and they don't have really any kind of EMTALA laws on the books there. So that can be a challenge. But for example, we had a large apartment fire, and the apartment was residents. The apartment residents were employees of my company, so we were obliged to respond, and we did. But also, the Air Force came because people were escaping up to a roof and using a helicopter to pluck people off. And then some of our company helicopters joined in that. And then the Civil Defense, which are the fire department, came and they were trying to get people, evacuate people from the building. And then our security personnel were there as well as the National Guard and the police.
Good grief.
There was absolutely no communication.
Well, that was my next question. What is that interoperability like?
It's a challenge because there's not most of the communication that happens other than face-to-face happens on mobile phones. In fact, I was providing logistics from our base facility, and we were not able to get radio communications. The noise, the helicopters, no landing zone was established for the helicopters, so they were just dropping right down on the dust next to our treatment tents. And so my friend who was on the scene was texting me lists of stuff that he needed, and I was loading equipment and sending it out. And you know, thank goodness for a robust mobile phone system. That's how we communicated. So that's an example of one of the communication challenges. The other communication challenge is my friend who was on the scene, he's American, he doesn't speak Arabic. And he was attempting to interface with some of the other providers there who don't speak English.
Oh, so nice.
We have another challenge there. But before we even get to the point where people are responding, because some order did occur. You know, the fire department saw that there was a medical treatment area and they were evacuating patients. But we learn, and my company, we operate on an IMS-based disaster management model. And it's based on that, you know, and as we all know.
I was going to ask about that, if they have
like
any form of ICS that everybody uses or just your company.
Well, that's the thing, not everybody uses it. Our company uses it, but not everybody else does, and they may not respect triage. So when you have a disaster, whether it's a car accident or fire or an attack on a mosque with multiple patients, typically patients are transported by bystanders. They throw people in the car and bring them to the nearest hospital, or they bring them to the hospital that they think is the best. So we'll be triaging people on scene, but we also have learned to establish the triage area outside the doors of our hospital so we can triage people as they come in.
That makes sense.
So with the apartment fire, one of the things I was doing was going out in the parking lot, and as a huge bus came in, walking through the thing and tagging people green, yellow, red, blep, blep, all the way down. So, you know, we had to do another triage system. It's further exacerbated by, there seems to be, I've detected, a kind of a sense of urgency and panic amongst people when they see blood and when they see disasters like this. So I'll be trying to treat somebody or triage somebody who's a red or a yellow, and then I'll have this family bring in this, you know, patient with injuries incompatible with life. I would have tagged them black, and pushing everyone out of the way and insisting that we treat them first. So we've had incidents like that happen, and we get security or the police involved, but if the family of this dead person and the dead person are of the same tribe as that security member or that policeman.
Oh boy, yeah.
So I love working as a paramedic, because being a paramedic is basically solving problems all the time, and interesting problems if you're lucky. And working in the Middle East and working when we have disaster situations, the problems get really interesting.
Well, but it sounds like you have a good grasp of the culture and of some of the things you know that you're going to expect. So when you were in this more or less operations command role, did you just choose to do that because you knew it needed to be done?
Yeah, I did. We had a command structure set up, and we had an emergency response center, and we had a command post, and there was some communications between them. And the command post on scene was requesting resources, and the emergency operator said it was saying, okay, but not doing anything about it. And so I said, all right, I just kind of slotted in. You know, I'm not one of those people who gets up and says, we should all do this and everybody should listen to me. I was like, see something needs doing, get it done.
Exactly.
And fortunately, my colleagues, both Western and local, are, you know, pretty sharp. And many of my colleagues are doing the same thing. And we kind of got together because, you know, we've all been kind of trained in the IMS system. We're like, all right, let's kind of get our own de facto set up here and establish our lines of communication with the various people.
So you have enough people that may have learned ICS or IMS, as you put it, in this country that you knew that would kind of get how that worked?
And that system is being pushed out to the other countries in the Middle East, because a lot of them are modeling their response systems off of, you know, what has worked before historically. They're hiring people from the West to come educate and develop and establish systems. I think I talked about that in my podcast with Jamie about, you know, working over there. So there's hope and there's changes that are happening, but there's some pretty substantial cultural barriers to smoothly implementing an IMS system where we, you know, just calmly and competently manage, you know, disasters, because there's also that, you know, I'm really important right now, so I'm going to go directly to the source, you know, and I've seen incident commanders who are surrounded by 30 people, everybody yelling at once.
Yeah, we deal with that too, to some extent. But it's, I mean, as a medic, you know, we're so focused on, there's your patient, and how often have you been in the middle of this huge chaotic mess and you only know what's happening in front of you? To be able to pull back and look at that 10,000-foot view and say, okay, this isn't talking to that, and we need this over here, I applaud you for having the wherewithal to look at that, because you knew it needed to be done.
Well, thank you. I argue that it's nothing special in me. It's very similar to how we would work as a paramedic. So as a paramedic, you have someone with chest pain. You don't sit there and stare at the monitor. You look at the whole patient. You back out. You take a 5,000-foot view. You know, is he sweaty? Yeah. Is having this? Is he having this? And so apply that same model, just like you would apply the incident management system simple structure on an 11-patient car wreck, and pull it out. And so, like I said, we solve interesting problems. And that's what we do. And algorithmic thinking and flexible thinking are important to being a good paramedic.
Critical
apply the same principles by backing out and looking at the whole problem. So my patient is an organism made up of lots of people. and a situation and factors that I have to deal with.
So you say you deal with bombings at mosques and so forth, so there's that element of terrorism.
Yes.
Are you concerned with, like, secondary IEDs or anything like that as a part of that?
Always
concerned we would
with
here?
That. I'm always concerned with that, and my situational awareness is definitely ramped up on a daily basis. However, the nature of these attacks have been specific. Daesh, which is what the Arabs call and the locals call, ISIS, what we call ISIS or ISIL, they are recruiting young men in these countries to go with a bomb belt and a gun and attack specifically Shia mosques in the area.
Oh.
And so they're going in with a targeted program, and the Shia mosques are responding by setting up better security. Like the most recent attack, two men came in to attack the mosque. They wanted to enter the mosque and then detonate, or enter the mosque, shoot, and then detonate. But the security stopped them. You know, it's like a community prayer area. So they're like, I don't know you. You can't come in. So the first guy panicked and detonated his belt. And the second guy's belt failed to detonate. And then...
Wow.
Yeah. And then there was a running gun battle after that. Now, the first detonation killed two people, the bomber and one other person. And then I think four or five other people were killed in the subsequent gun battle. And the second assailant was wounded and taken alive. We didn't go to that scene. Because by the time everything had shaken out, everybody had been driven in personal cars to hospitals all over the place.
Well, I find that interesting because in a conversation last night, you were saying that that's what they typically do. If there's an IED or something, they run in, grab people, and take them to the hospital.
Yep.
In our country, most people will run away for fear of whatever else is going to happen and their own safety. So I find it interesting that they even do that in that culture.
Yeah, it's a question of whether you call it bravery or stupidity. But the thing is that no matter what the situation is or how culturally different it are, these people care about their neighbors and their friends.
That's
and
good.
So they see something like that and they're like, oh my gosh, we have to get them. We have to help them. And they don't know how to help them. You know, a lot of times when I'm loading a patient in the ambulance and the family's there, they're grabbing the cot because they want to help. And I'm like, please.
could be a problem.
You're going to get me in trouble for hurting a patient. You know, it's going to fall over. But yeah, that's just that, you know, they want to do something. They want to help. So
sure. Sometimes
we'll go into disaster mode, but at the doors of the hospital.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah, because then we've got to, you know, manage and triage our patients, and then, you know,
you don't want everybody in the ER. We've had that situation, like with earthquakes in California, where I used to live, where you don't want everyone in the ER. You want to separate. In fact, one of our hospitals had it was a teaching hospital, so they had a place where they just had residents, and they sent the mediums and minors and the yellows, you know, up there to make sure that the ER wasn't going to get inundated with people that didn't need to be there.
Mm-hmm.
So that makes perfect sense to do that.
We have this kind of similar setup at our hospital, but still, sometimes people just try to, you know, just try to rush in.
But reflecting on your conversation with Jamie, if I wanted to consider a job in Saudi Arabia or somewhere in the Middle East, could you say with relative certainty that you feel safe there?
Yes. I've been there 6 years. I intend to be there probably 5 or 6 more. I feel safer most times where I live and work than I do when I'm in the United States. You know, as I said on Jamie's podcast, there's less of a culture of personal, intentional, physical violence. People yell and argue, but they don't beat each other up very much. And then, like I said, these attacks are focused specifically on a subset of the population that are local.
Right.
Also, these host countries, you know, the Emirates and Oman and Bahrain and Qatar and Saudi Arabia, they take very good care of their expats. So the amount of security surrounding me where I live and work is pretty high, and it's multi-levels. So that makes me feel better. And, you know, and I'm involved in a planning and management committee, so we do drills. I'm actually getting tabletop exercises.
That's excellent.
To be a regular thing. And, you know, I have to explain to these guys, it's just a game. Pretend like it's a game. Oh, okay. So
they're open to that.
They are. There is a... To a degree. It's being championed by some people high with enough influence, or as they say in the Middle East, wasta, to get other people on board, to get the stakeholders on board. But typically, the culture there is, you know, you don't want to be seen as anything but the best. So we don't do evaluations as much. We don't do, you know, they say we do drills over there. We frequently do exercises because they're announced and they're planned, and everybody is more concerned with making sure they do everything on time and perfectly than reevaluating their performance and saying, how can we improve this process?
So constructive criticism might need to be treated a little differently.
I have learned to be so much more eloquent than saying, hey, you messed that up. No, it's like, well,
maybe
you know, your
we
effort,
can do it
da, 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 but I think, I believe
consider.
You can be better, and you can do it better, and you deserve
we know
to
you
do
can.
It better. Yes, yeah, that's sort of thing.
Yes, because you're wonderful.
Yeah. So it's very interesting. And again, it's another interesting problem to solve.
So what is it you really like about being over there that's very different than here?
Well, right now the weather, it's beautiful, 72 degrees and sunny.
At the time of this broadcast, they've had 65 tornadoes around the country, so that's kind of what he's referring to.
I like the weather during the winter. It's very hot in the summer. But I think what I like is that I'm in a location where it's very easy for me to go to Africa, to Europe, to Asia, to Polynesia. And I really like that in my neighborhood, I've got myself. And my next-door neighbor is an Egyptian. Their next-door neighbor is a Syrian and Venezuelan couple, and then another Americans, and
then
a Canadian who married a Korean, and then I got the couple from Bangkok across the way, the Ethiopians on the other side of the playground.
Talk about diversity.
Yeah, so the parties are great. And the food is fantastic.
You get a
little bit of everything. So I think that's the thing I like the most, is the fact that I am not surrounded by a homogenous group of people who think exactly
not
like
even close.
Do, you know?
Do you get natural disasters there besides Haboobs?
We do. We get Shamals, big desert masses of dust and sand that come down and
blow
across here.
Don't they call those Haboobs?
We call them Shamal.
Shamal.
Yeah, Shamal is a desert sandstorm.
You just hunker down when one of those comes through.
Yeah, there. Yeah. And we get heavy fog around this time of year, which isn't really disastrous unless you combine the way the locals drive.
Yes, we talked about that.
And they're like,
earlier.
Oh, we'll just drive right through the fog. And then smash, boom. But natural disasters, not so much. We're not really prone to earthquakes. We're not really prone to, hurricanes. Though, you know, as a result of, changes in the climate, there was a typhoon that touched on the southern Arabian Peninsula last year. The first time in 75 years. Massive amount of damage while everybody's at war down there. So
that was a surprise.
And you will notice that I did not recommend Yemen as a country to work in. Yeah, they're busy killing each other over there, so.
Probably not a good idea.
So, yeah, we don't deal a lot with the natural disasters. Most of the disasters that we deal with are usually manufactured or man-made, fires, accidents. And, of course, there's a huge oil industry there. So
yes,
not following safety regulations, explosions. I went into disaster mode, but only had one patient with minor injuries for a fire on a natural gas line that burned steadily for 96 hours to drain 30 kilometers of pipe. And the plume was half a kilometer high. It was pretty awesome.
Must have been fun to watch.
It was.
So it is hot there, though. It is the desert.
Yeah, it does get hot. And especially in the summertime, depending on where you are, you'll get temperatures up to 120, 130 degrees Fahrenheit. Closer to the Arabian Gulf, which is where I live on the eastern side, we also get really high humidity because a lot of that water evaporates off the Gulf. And
that's rough.
So, I prefer to take my vacation in the summer.
Yes, I can see that. So what other kinds of MCIs? You talked about the fires, of course.
Yeah.
And
I think the biggest MCIs,
terrorism.
Yeah, the most dramatic ones, the most attention-getting ones are the terrorist-related, but the most common ones are motor vehicle accidents. I ran an MCI where it was a Toyota Prado, so it's about the size of a mid-size SUV that had 11 Bangladeshis in it.
Oh, my God.
And it rolled eight times.
They must have been small.
They were, and they were like, I think, one acted as an airbag for two, and there was some pretty substantial injuries. And
they don't wear seatbelts over
no,
there, right?
No, they don't. Okay. And we had...
See? There's a point to be made there.
We had 45 minutes time to get to scene, and it was summertime. And they had rolled into an area near the sea, so we had to walk through about thigh-deep wet sand to get to the vehicle.
Oh, my.
And we had to extract. And, of course, because of the weird nature, we didn't have any civil defense or fire department, didn't have a rescue squad, didn't have additional personnel. It was just me and my local colleague. And, fortunately, he's really strong, and the sand was soft, and we were actually able to pull the guy out from underneath the car.
Underneath the car.
Yeah, it was just the two of us.
And must have been a bit warm in there with 11 people.
It was very warm, and that's an example of the incident. And we, the security there just told all the walking wounded to get in my ambulance. We're the only unit there, so I get in there and I've got 7 people in my ambulance, and I've got 2 patients I want to transport.
Oh my!
And so I was literally pulling people out and then waiting for other resources to show up to take care of them. So again, it's like, okay, I'm in MCI mode, but I don't have my command structure. So let me pull back a little bit and prioritize what I can do. So.
Sounds like you always have complete control. You just got to go with the flow.
You just got to surf the chaos, man.
I could sit here and talk to you all day, but I think Jamie's going to give me the evil eye here because I'm sure we have other people scheduled.
I think we do.
So,
well, it's been a real pleasure talking to you.
I wish I could see you more than every once or
that's
twice
probably why you like
every 2 years.
Because you don't see me enough.
We love you, Mad Dog.
Thank you very
much. One of my favorite people.
Thanks.
So, I know your social media presence is minimal for obvious reasons, but is there some way people could communicate with you?
You can follow me and message me on Twitter. I am the Mad Dog Medic, one word. And it's MADDOGMEDIC. Did I spell that right? Yeah.
I think so.
I think that's the best way to reach me because my Facebook account was shut down because I don't use my real name. And I have shuttered my blog for now until I kind of get a better idea how to
run it for
more safety.
You have to do what feels right. Yeah.
Gotta be careful.
You don't want to get yourself in trouble.
Right. I like this job. I don't want to lose it.
Exactly. It sounds like it's an awesome job. It sounds like it provides you with a lot of challenges.
It does.
More than we have here, but you understand those challenges.
Yeah.
I imagine it was really tough in the beginning getting a sense of all of that, the language barrier, the social structure and all of that.
Yeah, it was. Fortunately, I'm paired with, you know, often working with a local colleague who was educated in the U.S. or in the West and has very good language skills. We can interpret and, you know, and they work on teaching me, you know, how to speak and how to, you know, figure out the nuances and subtleties. You know, I learned not to say, "What's up, dude?" because dude is worm in Arabic.
Well,
and you don't say, "Hey, what's up, my dog?" because you never call a man a dog in the Middle East.
Yeah, that probably
so I'm just
work,
like, my brother. I'm like, yay!
So do you, other Americans come into your domain, then, you know, you're in a good position to kind of train them and what you've learned.
And we, you know, and I also speak Spanish. So I've actually stood with an Egyptian doctor and a Mexican patient and kind of translated through. And
you are a talented guy, you know that? And you're good looking, too.
Keep that up. We're going to have to turn the cameras off.
Well, I guess that's a good place to end this. You can find me at SamBradley11 or Sam Bradley in the usual social media places, and certainly at thedisasterpodcast.com. We'd love for you to come up and give us some comments, and I'm sure Mad Dog would give you a response if you were to ask him a question. And let us know what you want us to talk about. We found out in the year and a half or however long we've been doing this, every time we think we might run out of subject matter, there's always something that we haven't covered. So, you know, we'd love to hear what you want to talk about. So disasterpodcast.com. Again, we're here at the EMS Today 2016 in the physio control booth, and we really appreciate them giving us a place to do this. So Mad Dog, I guess we'll see you next year, maybe.
Maybe
if we're here in Baltimore.
Yeah, we'll see.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
That's going to wrap up this week's episode of the MedicCast. I want to thank all of you for checking out the show this week and, of course, remind you to follow up on all of the information you get in this week's show over at the MedicCast blog. That's at MedicCast.com/blog. Over there, you'll find a show notes link at the top of the page. Go ahead and take a moment and follow up on all of the information and links to news items and more you find there each week. You can also sign up for our email newsletter that'll bring you those links directly into your email inbox each week if you want. There's a form on the right-hand side of the page. Just go ahead and fill that out, and you can get the MedicCast newsletter for yourself. I also welcome your comments and suggestions by email. So if you want to get back in touch with me, shoot me an email to podmedic@mac.com. Send in your ideas for news links, ideas for future show topics or interviews, whatever comments you might have. I really do look forward to hearing from you, and I'll make sure I get back to you. I work hard to respond back to every email that comes in, so please keep those emails coming. If you want to catch up with me on social media and some of the pages and sites out there, you can find me at most places under the handle PodMedic. So you can catch me over at Twitter at twitter.com/podmedic or Facebook at facebook.com/podmedic. Friend or follow me over there. Also, don't forget to check out our MedicCast Facebook page. We now have over 5,000 followers, so head over to facebook.com/medicCast. Click the like button on the top of the page and join the community over there. That's going to wrap up this week's episode of the MedicCast. Please make sure you spread the word and share the MedicCast with your colleagues and students and friends in the EMS world. I'll be back here each week with new episodes, new interviews, news items, tips, and more every Monday morning to start off your EMS week. Tell somebody else about the MedicCast today. I'm Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic. It's time to close out the show. Don't forget to thank our sponsors. And remember, folks, Scene Safety, BSI.